Greetings, comrades, and welcome to the Eastern Border. Yeah, today is going to be all about what I saw on the ground, because we spent all of this today together with the person who is the only guy in the Latvian embassy right now, and he's doing everything an ambassador would do. He's basically the guy who runs the whole show, and together with Zelensky's advisor, Anton Gerashenko, and a bunch of other journalists on a field trip. We went on the Borodyovskaya. Borodyonskaya pronunciation is a bit difficult because I only know the Russian version and not the Ukrainian one. And we also went to Bucha. The things I saw will probably remain in my head forever, and I hope I don't get nightmares, but yeah, pretty rough stuff, and I don't think anything else really would fit in today's episode unless I gave you this coverage from the ground. And if you want to see the pictures, we have pictures, then please go to my Twitter account. That's where I post most of them, or my Facebook page, you know, at Eastern underscore border on Twitter, or the Eastern Border on Twitter. They're all there. There's gonna be more because we took also some videos with the GoPro and some pictures of that, but it'll take some time until we can produce all of them. Right now, if the quality's not that good, then, well, sorry about that. But really, for pictures, please follow us on social media, because this is an audio format show, after all. Well, this was a bit strange, because there were a bunch of other journalists there. One of the most important people that actually was here, after whom we all ran after a whole day and who got lost, was apparently the guy who came up with the idea for the House of Cards TV show, and now he's here to get inspiration for next Netflix series. His name is Bo. We don't know his surname, because all day what we heard was, hey, where is Bo? Did Bo get lost again? Yeah, that happened constantly. None of the fun moments of today. However, well, we got into a police convoy. It was about 8 a.m. in the morning. We had woken up early because we had to get up at 7:30, and they picked us up with the embassy car, and then we went to the Kiev Circus, which is the meeting point. There, the Zelensky's advisor came, and we met everyone, and then we got into a police convoy. I was pretty sleepy and tired at first, and, well, it was a long day. However, already outside of Kiev, you can see all sorts of things. You can see burned down cars just on the side of it, because that's number one thing that they're trying to actually, you know, gather together. They are trying to remove obstacles from the road. Some of them they can't, because, for example, one of the big highways out there has one of its sides just blocked because a bridge has been, you know, blown up over it. And all the gas tanks, specifically gas tanks, that was one thing that I noticed, all the gas tanks have been blown up. I couldn't see a single working gas tank, even though apartment buildings, although some of them were blown up on the road, some of them were just smashed, and a lot more had their windows crashed and had received minor damage. Once you leave for about 20 to 30 kilometers outside of Kiev, or even less, you need to just leave Kiev kind of internal borders to start seeing damage. But about 10 kilometers out, it all starts and turns into a war zone with block posts and with people just trying to clear the rubble. The trip got scarier as we moved on, because more and more passport checks, more and more controls, and more and more damage to the surrounding area. Like I said, this time it's actually important that you go to my Twitter account and check those images, because due to how my internet is here in the hotel, I can't really upload properly from here. So that's a bit of a bad thing, but hey, I gave you an option. So then we get to Borodyanka, or Borodyaev. Like I said, doesn't really matter exactly. That was a heavy trip anyways. First thing that we saw was, well, among the first things, besides all the utter carnage, was the fact that civilian buildings were bombed. We were told, both by Mr. Gerashenko and by the locals, that this was one of the Russians when they were kind of stepping away. There were no kind of murders like that as there were in Bucha, except there was this one woman who apparently was leaving her basement after an air raid alarm, which we've gotten used to by now, and a Russian sniper shot her dead as she was leaving the basement. But I'll get to that. First thing we saw was that all the civilian buildings, all the high-rise buildings, they're all damaged. Some of them won't be repaired at all because they're Soviet-era Khrushchevkas. I think it really hits home more for the Eastern European people because, yeah, seems like they intentionally targeted them. As they were leaving, they just dropped bombs on them intentionally. Like, carpet bombed everything. The carnage is crazy. I saw houses with halves of them ripped out and lots of other houses burnt and a lot of stray animals, which just shows the cruelty that New York people have. And this was the place where now the famous, world famous cupboard picture has been taken. That was taken a few days earlier, but this is where this cupboard that had survived the bombings has come from. It was there on the wall with these decorative porcelain little roosters on top of it. It was a hard sight, but yeah, these were kind of symbolic of a thing, I suppose, because we were told that these porcelain roosters were kind of a popular gift to give around these places. All the stores bombed, and in a lot of houses and a lot of private avenues and buildings, yeah, they're still going in and they're searching for bombs there. Because after this, we were also told by the local municipal deputies that the Russians, as they left, they basically looted everything that they could. And even as they came in, they apparently had taken mobile phones from people. And some of them had actually just not even used them. They had just waved them in front of people and then just crushed them with a tank so that the locals couldn't call. I have to give credit to Mr. Gerashenko here. When he heard these news, he started organizing, an action where people can donate their old phones, maybe. So that's good. Gerashenko seemed a popular guy. So if you see him in media, then hey, he seemed okay, but I don't know the local politics here, anyways, that well. However, yeah, it seems that Russians, when retreating, had carpet bombed everything. Everything. And left bombs in the homes of people so that they would die when they would return to pick up their stuff. Especially hurt were apparently those in which houses, medals were left, or some signs that they had served the Ukrainian government. Because as the invasion began, apparently the younger people had evacuated, but a lot of them had left their elderly parents behind and then had contacted the authorities so that they would help them evacuate the elderly. So it was mostly elderly who died in this conflict, but in this bombing, but not all of them. Of course, there were people there. They were still pulling out people from the rubble because even after this retreat, the Russians didn't allow Ukrainians to pick up the dead bodies for a few days. Gerashenko also told us that this was probably an intentional thing so that more Ukrainians would die. It's a weird, eerie feeling, really. A lot of houses haven't been cleaned from the rubble. They basically had removed 19 bodies the day before we arrived, and there were houses, and every time I went and saw and took pictures of one of these places, I was told exactly how many people died in this building. And then we went to the city center part where there was a monument to Taras Shevchenko, one of the Ukraine's greatest heroes. And it was all, damaged as well. Shrapnel had hit it. Because it seemed so eerie. All the stores were closed, and everything was looted. Like, the people are now standing in lines and getting their food from the humanitarian aid. And I also made a short video, which I also shared both on Twitter and Facebook, where I really show you physically where your aid happens, because they have turned a schoolhouse into basically a warehouse and a place where people with nowhere to stay live. But then the hardest part struck me when I was sitting in the city center and amongst these people who are just standing there in line to get water and food and everything, there were people standing aside. They weren't looking at the food trucks or anything. They were people who were looking at the rubble being cleared. And there was a man who told me and other journalists that, well, he told me the story about the women being sniped from the basement when they left, and he was waiting there when his son would be finally found in the rubble. His son was 43 years old and was named Sergei. And And his dad now goes there and waits until they find him, because his apartment is destroyed. His was the apartment that was in the building that was half demolished. And there were many people like this. I count at least five people who are just sitting there, and they want to talk to journalists because I think they've moved past sheer horror, and I don't know what drove them to even talk to us and how that worked out in their brains, but it was super heavy, super difficult to do. That was an awful, awful situation to be in. And then we were taken to this warehouse where the school stuff happened. Really, it's a weird thing that all their stores are closed and they have nothing left and they're cleaning rubble. And the number one thing they're saving, by the way, of what's left, because there are people going into these half-ruined buildings and taking out and giving to those who own the apartments there. They're trying to save something, and what they're saving is books, a lot of books. We saw monitors and TVs being carried out, a couple of them, but a lot of people just gathered books. And it means a lot to me as a historian and as a podcaster that people are trying to save what's dear to them. And if you see someone saving books, then, well, my heart just warmed up there for a second. And with all the mine houses and everything, it is extremely difficult for them to preserve anything. And of course, some people didn't want to talk to me. And that was an extremely difficult experience. But yeah. We saw these all of these ruined buildings and everything, and we saw brave firefighters doing things. And what really struck me is that, yeah, your help is still very much needed, because when people are standing in line for all the goods, like even fresh water is rare and food is rare. But at one point when we were there, the local humanitarian aid people were just giving out washing powder, you know, for your clothes, and apparently they only had like two cartons left. And one lady wanted to grab one, but the guy who was dealing out this aid said, "No, no, lady. If I give this pack of detergent, this powder that's used to wash clothes, to you, then no one else will get it." And then the locals, mostly elderly people in the line, just, you know, they just pulled out plastic bags and they kind of split up these two boxes, small boxes, about half a kilo each, really tiny ones, amongst themselves so that they could wash something. It seems that a lot of people have helped a lot, but help is still very much necessary. And after this, we drove to Bucha, and on our way there, we spotted the place where apparently some Russian tanks had been destroyed. That was my moment when I kind of, you know, I was going a bit crazy by that point, but you know, I had to step out, and then we took a lot of pictures there, and I stepped on one of these tanks, and I took a picture, which is now my new Facebook picture, because at that point I felt very surreal. You know, I've only seen tanks in museums before, and now I saw one that was hit by a shell, and you could also see where the shell hit it, and it was, again, one of these weird experiences. Please go to my Twitter. The pictures are there, and the tank right next to it had its turret blown off, and it was half empty except a black husk in there, and I didn't know what it was. And then I was told that it was a Russian soldier, and that this is what a high explosive anti-tank round does. He apparently had died instantly. Everything, most of his body was gone. All you can see is like this black charred substance, and you can, if you look close enough, you can spot the ribs there. Apparently, there were some Red Bull cans thrown into the tank as well. No one really cares about them, because, well, the Ukrainians don't have energy to pull off the Russian dead, and the Russians just don't care about their own soldiers. That's another interesting and strange topic, maybe for another day. And then in Bucha, we really didn't have the time to talk around and see that much, because it was late already. I had to do my own things, and there were a lot of journalists and war prosecutors there. And, well, I have to say that war prosecutors from France currently, Gerashenko himself said that, you know, Ukrainians have experts and that we should maybe rely on them, because what else is there to see? People were with their hands tied back and shot. Today, you know, turns out that there'll be even more dead bodies in stories from Bucha, because they had uncovered another mass grave behind the local Orthodox church. And I was told that either 65 or up to 68 people have been buried there, and they are uncovering that one and pulling out the bodies from that there tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. my time. But I sadly have an interview because some local journalists called up our Latvian Journalists Association and asked for help because they're running out of resources to aid and do their work in all over Ukraine. So as I'm here right now in Kiev, I offered to, interview them. I don't know if it'll be in English, you'll probably hear it on the show. If it's going to be in Russian, then I'm going to send it to all the media outlets that are in my Latvian Journalists Association so that we can help them somehow. But yeah, today I saw a mass grave. I saw ruined, destroyed lives, and I saw a bunch of stray animals running around, which just shows that their owners are dead. And I saw a burnt man in a tank, and I don't know how old he was, probably 18, maybe 20, maybe, I don't know. But the feeling that you get from seeing such things is pretty terrifying. Please, please do check out the pictures. I repeat myself, but it's because I feel like I must. And yeah, sadly, I don't still have any data about the chemical attack in Mariupol, but that's gonna happen soon. As soon as I get solid data on this fact, I will report on this. I believe it's plausible, but I'm not exactly sure. I would like to see some independent data. If it's even possible, and there's someone even left in Mariupol, because I think that place is just gone. I have a good news for you, though. Probably the only positive thing in this whole show is that tomorrow at 9:30 p.m. we are recording with Dan Carlin. Yeah, this time I am recording, and it's going to be from here, and I'm going to use my backup microphone. But still, Dan's coming on the show, and that episode's going to be fully edited, of course. And I hope it's going to be good. It's going to be great, even. That's one of the things that I really, really hope succeeds on this trip, and that I get to inform all of you about what's happening. And in the meantime, thank you to everyone who's our Patreon supporter. We really appreciate that. And once I get home, I have a long list of you to read through. That'll probably take an extra because I'm very thankful, and I have a lot of things that I want to say to you specifically, patrons, because you're paying my salary basically. And also, huge thanks to all the one-time donations. We have seen some generous people, and trust me, all those one-time donations, which you can still do and will be much appreciated, in the easternborder.lv page. Just click the donate button there. They'll be put to good use because we're trying to do our best here, and it's pretty expensive. But hey, we're not wasting your money. We're trying to do some good and help the locals as well. And also, more than anything, please do donate to the Ukrainian civilians and army, because one thing that the guy who runs their embassy told me is that, well, for example, in Latvia, we in total have gathered 7.8 million euros in donations, out of whom about 6.5 million have been spent already. And I've seen the carnage here, and I've seen the destruction. It's awful. So if you can, please, please do help. This matters a lot, because, well, the people are fighting, and they haven't lost their spirit or their will to exist and to continue on this madness, because they don't want to win. They need to win. I can understand. Like, I have a personal dislike, hatred. I try to not use the word hatred here. I try to bring that light back that I had once within me, and I try to bring that back on the show, and you've been very supportive of me, so that I can do that. But the locals, they're in a dark, dark pit, and we're just trying to bring some light to them as well. And I really wish that all of you, dear listeners, would also be a part of this. So yeah, that's it for today. And sorry that this is an on the ground, on the spot report from literally what I saw today, instead of a tactical or strategical analysis. But I think that these stories matter as well, and that it's important that I am here to tell them to you. Happiness is mandatory. До свидания, товарищи.